What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the MSU Sports Zone podcast. Today we have good friend of the podcast and former co-host, Rivals reporter for SpartanMag.com, Justin Thin. Justin, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Good to be back.
Yep. First things first, how stressful have the 36 hours been for yourself? Finals, recruiting coverage, writing articles on transfer quarterbacks. You've been all over the place.
Yeah, I guess the good thing about it has been that nothing has really caught us by surprise. Everything happened exactly how we expected it to, other than the fact that Anthony Russo joined Michigan State yesterday. But Corey was on that right from the jump, too. He found out like 3-4 hours before that went public, had me write the piece because he got that scoop. And it was easy to kind of put that together in the 4 hours we had. And then beyond that, I've known about my signing with Michigan State 100% confirmed for about a week. And then before that, I had still known for 3 or 4 weeks that he was going to sign with MSU eventually. I just didn't know whether it was December or February. And yeah, that was pretty much everything went to plan. No surprises. So it wasn't as stressful as it could have been.
Yeah, for sure. And like you said, yesterday was a big day. So let's get into it. What was your overall feel for Mel Tucker's first recruiting class at Michigan State? Something that I noticed was that 14 out of 19 commits, only 16 signed, but 14 out of the 19 are not from the state of Michigan. So is that something to, you know, take notice going forward?
Yeah, I think any successful program in like the modern era of college football is going to do that. You can't really stick to your regional footprint and expect to have like national contention, like going to the playoff and stuff like that, unless you're like a revolutionary player developer like Mark D'Antonio. And even if you are, you're still going to be better off by getting a higher level of talent from other parts of the country. So it's definitely great to see them expanding the map and getting their foot in everywhere. And that's also going to be seen in 2022. They already have two guys from out of state, with Gavin Brocious from Arizona, who was actually yesterday named the top offensive lineman in Arizona. And the offensive guard from Georgia, Chris Phillips, he's also an out-of-state guy that's doing really well over there, rising in the rankings. And basically, that's just how you're going to see things here. Like, they're not going to give extra emphasis to guys that are in the region. They're definitely going to recruit the region hard to make sure that they don't lose any must-get guys here. But they're not going to give any sort of bias or preference to guys just because they're within a 5-6 hour drive. They're going to get the best guys that they feel are the top guys that they've evaluated. And if they happen to be in the Midwest, that's great. If they're not, that's great too. And that's a trend you're definitely going to see moving forward.
Mm-hmm. And obviously one of the big surprises, well, not surprise, but just that it was yesterday, was in state landing Anthony Russo. So for those who don't know, it was reported he was offered on Tuesday, and then he committed yesterday. And what I noticed, too, is we'll have 6 quarterbacks on scholarship when he enrolls in January. And also that I'm not sure about, you know, what everyone was saying on the board and all that, but the overall mood I got from the whole Instagram community and all that is you're either really happy or really bummed out by – not even bummed out, but more like you mentioned with Jim last night. A lot of people are looking at the interceptions as a downfall. I haven't really seen anyone that's been in the middle. It's either one side or the other. Is that what you've got as well?
Not really. Maybe that's kind of how the Instagram community might look at it. But for the most part, I think everybody understands that competition is necessary no matter what, no matter what position, no matter who the starter is. You always need competition. And the way I look at it is either Peyton Thorne's going to beat him out, and that's going to say a lot of good things about Peyton Thorne, and it probably means he's going to have a great season. Or Peyton Thorne's not going to beat him out, and that means you have the better quarterback playing in Anthony Russo. You don't lose anything either way, and Peyton Thorne's not going to transfer because of a guy with 1 year of eligibility. So it's almost like a no-brainer to me. And whether somebody's really excited about it or not can be debated, but I don't think anybody is really towards – an extreme side of the spectrum from like the crowd that I've kind of interacted with. Everybody's pretty much like, okay, good. You needed a quarterback to add to the room. We got him. Now, some people are really excited about his potential. Other people are saying, let's wait and see, but I don't see anybody really taking an extreme approach. But I would say to anybody that is just looking at the interceptions, which is kind of my very first like thought too is I would watch some of the full games, not highlights, but like full games. And you'll notice that I don't think you'll see a worse offensive line than Temple. And you also won't see in anybody else's full game film, receivers drop like three straight passes to start a game. I know Will Hunter posted some GIFs on Twitter late last night of when they played against SMU in 2019. He threw like two or three dime passes to start the game, and they all were incomplete because it hit the receivers in both hands and they dropped them. And that's basically the story of Anthony Russo's entire career at Temple. He's had three different offensive coordinators, I believe. The coach that signed him, Matt Rhule, never actually got to coach him because he left to Baylor. And all you see beyond that is him making so many good throws all of the time, every part of the field, whether it's across the field from the left hash to the right sideline or just straight down the field up the middle. The only downfall is that because he can make every throw, a lot of times he throws interceptions. But that's only half of the reason for the interception total. The other half is the fact that he never has any time to actually sit there and survey the field. So he ends up getting sacked constantly because he has no offensive line. And eventually throughout the game, he's thinking, all right, do I start taking more risks right before I get hit? Or do I just keep taking sacks and or throwing it away and punting it away all game long? So eventually he just decides to kind of make up for all of the lack of offensive protection he gets and starts to take some more risks. So I think part of it is by design of he's just like, all right, let me do something, and throwing the ball in tighter windows. And the other part of it is he trusts his arm a little too much. But all the arm talent is there. I know a couple draft evaluators, Will Hunter knows one, and Jim kind of knows one, and these guys are basically all saying that he's a late round draft pick as it is, without having time to throw, without getting the interceptions under control. So just imagine what his potential could be if he actually has time to throw and has real receivers with two hands. I don't think he's still going to light the world up or anything. Like, I don't think he'll be first team Big Ten quarterback, all Big Ten quarterback next year, but he can be a pretty good contributor for sure. I look at him as like a Peyton Ramsey tier of a contributor, not like a player comparison, because Peyton Ramsey is a little different. He doesn't have as much arm talent. He's more of a game manager and he's more mobile, but just that level of contribution can be expected from him.
Yeah. And I totally worded that wrong. I meant to say that I haven't seen anyone thrilled. It's either been in the middle or the other way.
Oh, I see.
And another, you brought up a good point too, is a lot of people are saying he does trust his arm too much. Do you think that will be a concern going to Michigan State, or, you know, it's not as much because Michigan State has a better old line and they could run the ball more in a way?
Yeah, I think he won't have to rely on it as much to work miracles. So it'll definitely bring the interception numbers down. But a lot of times if somebody trusts their arm, they will they'll probably still throw a decent amount of interceptions. So the interceptions will be there, but I would much rather have interceptions while still having a high completion percentage. Because if you notice, last year was 68% passer with a nine touchdown, six interception ratio. So the good part of it is he'll still put together tons of drives, go down the field and score tons of points, and then occasionally throw an interception here and there, which is much better than what Michigan State had under Rocky Lombardi, where you weren't getting any sort of offense and the interceptions were getting in the way as well. You can definitely win a lot of games with guys that trust their arms too much and throw like an interception to every game while every other drive is well done and efficient. That's not going to be much of an issue.
And another thing that I haven't seen anyone talk about, but I've, you know, thought about it, is what this could mean for any quarterback on the roster not named Peyton Thorne. Because although it's not a big story, but you have Hamp Faye that's enrolling early, and some might say, what does this mean for, you know, Rocky, as you mentioned, Theo Day, Noah Kim? Do you think you could see multiple transfers in that quarterback room, or way too early?
First of all, the certainties are it's definitely has 0% impact on Hamp Faye. Like, it couldn't have any less of an impact on Hamp Faye. And then beyond that, I don't think if you're Peyton Thorne, you're like, yeah, you're going to be kind of a little irritated that you're going to have to prove yourself a second offseason, but you're not transferring with 4 years of eligibility left, a maximum of four, just because of 1 year. So that's definitely there's almost a non-existent chance that he transfers too. And as for Noah Kim, I don't know what his career is going to end up being. So that's not really somebody I'm taking into consideration just yet. And even if he does end up panning out or something, I still think he has way too much eligibility left to be thinking about transferring either. He just might do so because he might figure that he doesn't see the field over Hanfei. But that I don't think Russo is going to play any role in his decision. As for the other two guys, I'm frankly not concerned what they decide to do either way. I don't think either of them will ever be playing over Peyton Thorne or Hanfei. Or even if you take Russo out of the equation, I don't think either of them play over Thorne the next couple of years and then Faye. I frankly, personally, just don't really – it's not something I'm thinking about. Whatever they decide to do, I wish them the best of luck, whether they stay – whether they go, I don't think it's something that should be weighing heavily on any MSU fans' minds.
Yeah, that's where I'm at with the whole situation. I just was wondering what the overall mood of you were thinking about that. But next thing, I mean, obviously this question's been asked 1,000 times. So what's the latest with Audric Estime, and is there any hope he stays committed and signs with Michigan State regardless of the early signing period or February?
I don't have too much hope that he sticks with MSU. The only reason I don't say that it's a lost cause is just because of the staff that is recruiting him from Michigan State. Like if there's anybody that can reserve some hope in, it's Mel and Will Pegler. But yeah, like just reading the writing on the wall, I don't think it's that likely that he sticks with Michigan State. Like I said, you can't count MSU out. Like I could end up looking like an idiot if I would have said no chance and then Mel and Will work some miracles. But if I had to put money on it, I'm putting it on Notre Dame for where he ends up. But there might even be a chance he signs with them by Friday, but that's just rumors that I've heard from New Jersey and whatnot. But if I had to put money, I'm saying Notre Dame.
And a lot of people are going to say, well, what's next for that if he does?
Oh, they have a plan. They have a specific backup plan in mind.
Well, that's what I was getting at. I've seen, Harold Joyner's name thrown around. Do you think it would be through the transfer portal, or do you think they would try to get another guy in the class?
I know exactly who the backup plan is, so I can't – but I don't want to comment in certainty until he goes public. So I'll say that I don't want to answer that question, but I will just reiterate the fact that they have somebody in mind. They've always had somebody in mind. And the fact that they are very sold on him and there's not going to be any hesitation to take him should kind of tell you all you need to know about not only their faith in him, but also and their, confidence level and their estimation of where Estime is going to go. Like they understand the situation with Estime very well. And this, I guess, timing of this decision, I feel like to take on the replacement is gonna kind of put that, I guess, perception of where they stand with Estime into a clearer picture.
Mm-hmm. And I guess the last thing about Estime, the only saltiness for me, and I told you this the other day, and I bet it's the only hope that the staff's preaching to him is the fact Notre Dame didn't really offer him until they knew what Edwards was doing in a way that could be a shot at Estime in a way where, Pegler and Tucker could say to him, like I mentioned, they didn't want you in a way until this happened.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know exactly what they're saying to him, but I would bet money that that's something they've already said to him, and that's probably something they're focusing on. Like I said, this is just me guessing. Nobody has told me, this is their sales pitch, but if I'm those guys, that's the first thing I'm touching on, and those guys are two very smart recruiters, so I don't doubt it if that's what they're fixating on. But I'll say that right after when Estime got offered by Notre Dame and he gave the quotes to our Adam Friedman, who's the Rivals East Coast guy, he said, Michigan State has wanted me this much since day one. So that's something that's clearly important to him because he made a note to point that out specifically right after he was done talking about Notre Dame. So he's 100% putting stock into that. The only thing is that going to be enough to stop him from going to Notre Dame? I don't think so. But that is definitely something that is in his mind, and it probably is the reason that he hasn't already flipped. If he wasn't putting stock in Michigan State's loyalty and stuff like that, I bet he would have flipped the second he got the offer. So that's he's probably putting a lot of weight into that, and that's the reason he hasn't flipped yet. But I think at the end of the day, it's still not going to be enough. But that's definitely, something that he's thinking about.
and going to his teammate, Geno Vandermark, who also didn't sign yesterday. You know, there's been rumors that West Virginia, Rutgers.
No, not really. I know what you're saying. I know where that's been brought up, but that's not the case. Geno's going to stick with Michigan State.
Okay, and that's what I was going to ask next is, do you believe he would sign early or would he wait?
Corey's been in some communication over there with people in New Jersey. I don't know. I don't think he's heard anything with 100% certainty, but like he's been reporting on the message board here in the last couple of days, there's a decent chance he signs by Friday. We'll see if it happens or not. But they have been talking to Geno quite a bit, and they basically, I guess, a good way to kind of look at it, which you kind of mentioned over text too, was that if SMA decides to break his school's tradition. And sign with Notre Dame or Michigan State. Either way, if he decides to break that tradition, then Geno kind of has a reason. If SMA signs to Notre Dame by tomorrow, I mean, I guess, or Michigan State, but like I said, Notre Dame is probably the destination for him. If he signs by tomorrow, then I guess Geno might be comfortable breaking his school's tradition. Maybe not, but I think that the chances of Geno being more comfortable to step out on a limb and do the opposite of his other high school teammates would kind of, the likelihood would kind of raise, and he would sign with Michigan State then at that point.
Yeah, well, that's good to hear for some fans that were worrying he could end up leaving, but that's great for clarification.
Yeah, anytime those kind of articles come out where an analyst kind of writes the fact that certain schools are in the mix, I would suggest that if people actually have access to the whole article and aren't just looking off screenshots, to actually scroll to like the bottom and read the author's like final thoughts on the situation, because that's where they really kind of put that noise aside. Where they first bring up schools, they kind of cut through that noise at the end and give a real summary of what's happening. And in the article that you're referencing, that at the end, the author ended up saying that there's a very solid chance that Vandermark signs in Michigan State by the end of the week. So even in those articles that kind of create those rumors, it's always a good idea to read like the whole article. That's like a tip to anybody out there who's kind of panicked about that.
Yeah, that's a great point. And obviously the next guy, which a lot of people have mixed emotions on, to say the least. So Rayshon Benny, he did not sign yesterday. And I don't think there's a lot of cause for concern with Michigan State fans, but with other fan bases, and I know you're not going to name drop, but I will. You got guys like EJ Holland at Michigan implying that this was some big crazy news that he didn't sign early, but as you've told me all along and others, that this has always been the plan for Rayshon to not sign early. So what's the latest with him, and I guess can you shut all those rumors down?
The latest is the fact that there is no latest, and anybody that claims that there's a latest is basically manufacturing hype. So basically, nothing has changed with Rayshon for as long as like we've been in communication with him. His plan was to always sign in February, even before he chose a school. And the fact that he is recruiting hard for Michigan State, as hard as he ever has, is all you need to know about how solid he is. So if somebody out there says Rayshon hasn't signed yet, as if it's some sort of development, that's first of all, I'm not on board with that. And second of all, if somebody adds the fact that Michigan has a chance here just because he hasn't signed, well, I mean, I guess that's not something that somebody could point to and say that's incorrect. It's not a black and white statement. Depends how you define the words chance. Because if you're just looking at the fact that Rayshon courteously and respectfully responds to Michigan's text whenever they message him, then okay, sure, you can paint the picture that way. But the fact that he is fully like committed to Michigan State, the staff knows he's fully committed. Anybody that asks him, he tells them he's fully committed to Michigan State. He's recruiting hard for the recruits. That's been the case since he committed, and that's the case today. And that has never changed. And he's just waiting just to wait. And just because he might occasionally respond to a Michigan text every like week or so does not change the fact that he was never going to sign early, and it does not mean that Michigan is surging. So that's basically people using a technicality of him just not totally blocking everybody's number at Michigan and kind of twisting it in a way to say that Michigan has like a last ditch chance, when I don't buy that theory whatsoever. And that's basically the best way I can put it.
And the funniest thing to me that nobody has brought up, and I'm sure you've like haven't thought about it this way, but there's a good chance Don Brown and their defensive line coach aren't going to even be back.
Yeah.
So, and they've been recruiting them. So I don't know where, who would even be recruiting them there. That's the funniest part.
Yeah. I think even if Harbaugh gets the phony extension, that's going to have easy buyout clauses. Even if he gets that phony extension, it's still probably the last season for the D-line coach, Sean Nua. And that was really his biggest draw to Michigan. I know his mom really liked the Michigan D-line coach. That's a good point. I don't understand why that's something that's not talked more about. But like I said, I don't think the whole situation at all should be talked about, if you ask me. But I guess when somebody posts out there the fact that he's alive, people have no choice but to read into it. But I don't know. I don't know why people have confidence that he has any chance of going to Michigan. But it's not the fact that he hasn't signed, like I said. It's the fact that there's no new development that I'm aware of, and yet people are making the narrative seem like there's been some sudden change when that has not been the case. It's like the same situation that it's been since the day after he committed. He respectfully responds to anybody that texts him, tells them basically that he's committed to Michigan State, continues recruiting for Michigan State, and then suddenly the day before signing day, people decide to start acting like, oh, he's not signing and Michigan has a chance. But like I said, I've already gone over that kind of in detail, so we'll just leave it alone, I guess. That's my thoughts on it.
Yeah, and the last thing I really had to talk about with that was, and this, I don't know if it's anything big, but do you know the reason why he never put much thought into signing earlier, or just it wasn't, like you said, it wasn't his plan?
Well, so I didn't ask him why, but I kind of want to speak on that in general. If you're a four-star recruit and you're going to a place that's not Alabama, Ohio State, or kind of these big name places where a four star is just average, you have no reason to sign early unless you're early enrolling. Say something absolutely impossible or something far-fetched happens after you sign, like you didn't expect, like, I don't know, a assistant coach that hired you taking a job in the NFL or your position coach, maybe, I don't know, has to retire for, hopefully not, but some sort of medical reasons or just something random that you can't expect or that you don't know what happened. If there's even a slim chance of any real world event like that taking place, why in the world would you sign a paper in December that you can sign in February? There's literally no gain for a player that's not worried about a spot to sign in December instead of February. The only thing you could do is lose out by doing that. As long as your staff and your fellow commits and anyone that cares about your decision and would make a decision based off of your decision, as long as all of those people are aware you're 100% committed, there's not really any sort of gain other than fans relaxing for you to sign early. And that's just how I would say is the case in general. Like, if I was a four-star recruit and I was going to a non-Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, I would not sign early unless, yeah, I don't know. I can't really think of a reason why I would sign early.
Yeah, you make a great point there. My only thought was, you know, maybe he was holding out hope for, you know, the Michigan that their season got canceled if they postponed it to the spring, but that wouldn't even matter considering it'd be February, and that was the talk for this season would be pushed back to like March if it ended.
Well, it doesn't matter because signing the paper is different than enrolling, so that's not really that really doesn't have anything.
You're right. Yeah, you're right. I didn't think about that, but. Anything else you any developments or anything?
No, just I don't know if hopefully it didn't happen while we were recording, but just keep an eye out on Twitter for whoever Michigan State has coming up here next. And beyond that, I think it might be a while until there's any other developments. Maybe some movement with people like Mislinski possibly down the line in a month or so. Obviously, Keon Coleman on February 3rd, and they're going to keep hitting the transfer portal really hard. But other than maybe Gino signing tomorrow and maybe Audric signing Notre Dame, I guess, or here, that's really all that's out in the forefront other than this imminent news that Corey and I have been expecting. Corey got Corey got kind of a confirmation of sorts a little while ago. I want to say like around 11:30, and now we're just patiently waiting. Maybe it's tonight. Maybe it's tomorrow. We'll see. Other than that, I guess we wait until February then.
Yep, absolutely. I didn't bring up any of those other names.
Not really any updates there. Just waiting it out.
That's what I was going to say. It's 2 months away. But other than that, I appreciate you joining me, Justin.
Yeah,
good
definitely.
To be back on with you. I guess if you want to shout out your Instagram, because I know you've been building that.
Yeah, definitely. You can follow me on my Twitter, at Justin Thind. You can also follow me on my Instagram with the same @. And I also run the Spartan Mag Instagram page, too. That one we're trying to grow a little bit more. Twitter growth has come much easier than the Instagram growth. So, that's at the Spartan Mag. No underscores or spaces or anything. And then, yeah, so go ahead, hit me a follow on any of those three. And thanks for having me, Spencer.